Hello, everybody. Thanks for coming by the Vet Tech Tap Room today. Super excited to be here, Dave. What are you drinking over there?
What am I drinking today?
Did you find some Sweet Baby Jesus?
I did find some Sweet Baby Jesus. I found one store, a Harris Teeter, that was selling it on my way home from work, so I was really excited about that. However, I was distracted by a different beer that's made by the same company. The company is called Dewclaw. It's out of Baltimore, and this one's called Dirty Little Freak. And this one is a brown ale that has coconut, chocolate, and I think caramel in it, but you can't really taste anything but the slight hint of coconut, and it's just the chocolate brown ale that's really good. And the Sweet Baby Jesus, for those of you that don't know, is supposed to be a chocolate peanut butter porter. It doesn't really taste very peanut buttery, but it's very smooth.
And I really peanut like butter is a really difficult flavor to impart in a beer. I've had a lot of chocolate peanut butter stouts that like maybe you get a little bit, but it like, man, I just want to taste like a Reese's peanut butter cup. And a lot of times they just don't.
Every time I get something that has like some type of it, like peanut butter is in the ingredients list, it just tastes kind of smooth. It doesn't really give that taste of nutty flavor, but it's very smooth.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what are you drinking?
Well, I am just cracking a IPA called See for Yourself. It's from a brewery in Weymouth, Massachusetts, that actually just opened very recently, and it's called Vitamin C, like SEA. Really great people, really incredible beer coming out of there. And I happened to go out there a couple weeks ago and was able to get some cans. And so it's just a single IPA, but it is really good. And
you do love your IPAs.
I sure do.
And I used to love IPAs when I was younger, but now they, for some reason, they just give me a headache.
Yeah, I definitely hear you on that. Molly and I are actually headed out to a tap takeover at a local beer hall here in Providence from one of my favorite breweries up in Portland. And I'm planning to have one of their stouts later. So
yeah, we do that down here too, those tap takeovers. They're really great.
So fun. So yeah. A lot of cool stuff going on in our field right now, right? Like VMX, I don't know if it actually starts today, but a lot of people are headed down there today. Jenny Fisher, who we're going to have on, is headed down there. Amanda, who we just interviewed, is going to head down there. Steven Sattal, we're going to have on soon, is headed down there. A lot of really like prominent people in our field.
A lot of people we wanted to interview
or have interviewed already. Yeah. A lot of people headed down there for VMX. So it's definitely the start of conference season.
Well, this episode's going to drop on Sunday, and that conference will still be going on. So people will be listening to us as they attend conferences. So hello.
Hello to you guys. We hope you enjoy you're enjoying sunny Orlando. It is like 11 degrees up here in Rhode Island tonight.
Oh boy.
So it dropped down
to 40 today.
Oh, ooh. I'd take that. Enjoy that warmth and the sunshine down there in sunny Florida, those of you that are listening down there.
Yes.
So, you know, something super fun we did this week, we put out on Facebook a post, and it's one actually that a doctor I used to work with posted on her personal page, and I thought it was a lot of fun. But It was fun.
We got a lot of response with
that. Yeah, we sure did, and we'll have to do more of those as we see some of that stuff. But it was about quote unquote making, you know, one of your pets a roommate, and then saying, you know, a funny or annoying habit that your roommate has. And we got some really great responses.
We did get some great ones. The first one that I saw that I really liked was from Amber Gregg. Thank you, Amber. And she says, my roommate picks up the little rocks in his teeth and uses them to massage his feet. Now, I'm not sure what that exactly means.
Or what species this is?
Yeah, what species? Is it a dog? Is it a cat? Maybe it's a bird.
Maybe a rat or a rodent of some kind. But this one was my favorite as well. So, and then, of course, my mom chimed in, Susan Backus, and said, my roommate wakes me up every night humping and biting the back of the neck of my other roommate. and I know exactly which cats she's talking about.
It's funny because we're thinking about this as their pets, but the whole point of this practice was to think of it as your roommate.
Right, right.
And to think of the roommate doing that is like, no. That's, no. In that same thread, Stephanie Marshall said, my roommate likes to eat my baby's diapers.
Yes. Oh, that's always yikes.
That is a foreign body surgery I do not want to be involved in at
absolutely
all.
Absolutely. Oh, and then another one we really liked, Ashley Dupree, who we hope to have on the show before too long. My roommate insists on helping me go to the bathroom, and then in capitals every time. yeah
that has to be a cat.
Yeah, for
that,
sure.
No, that might be a dog, but probably a cat.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say for her it's one of her cats. But,
yeah.
But yeah. So no, super
that was
fun.
That was great fun.
Yeah, and please, if you're listening to this, keep commenting. If you haven't already, or even if you have another annoying habit that your roommate has, because we really enjoyed reading those.
Yeah, we have to do more like that. That was fun. Yeah. We got a lot of audience participation, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah. Engagement or.
And speaking of audience participation, we got some new downloads this month, I guess. Yeah. It would be this month.
Yeah.
We got downloads from Japan, from Belgium, South Africa, Singapore, and the last one was the Cayman Islands.
The Cayman Islands.
Who knew, right?
Yeah. Somebody's on vacation in the Cayman Islands listening to the Vet Tech Cafe.
That could be it. Maybe it's just people that are on vacation and decide that they can't get far enough away from work that they have to actually listen to a veterinary technician podcast.
Maybe, or it's like automatic download and it just downloaded while they were there.
Well, Jeff, I'd like to think that people did it on purpose.
It could be. Yeah. Let's go with that. Let's go with that. So one of the things, you know, we were actually been thinking about chatting about this article for a little while, and we just haven't found the right space. So we'll talk about it tonight. This article that was in Today's Veterinary Business in the December issue, and it was called Five Things You Didn't Learn in School. And it was written by a veterinary technician about veterinary technicians coming out of veterinary tech school. Now, of course, you're teaching full time in a vet tech ed space in a 2-year AVMA program. I taught for 7 years in an alternate route school in California. So education, vet tech ed specifically, is something near and dear to both of us.
Yes.
And these five things are definitely some soft skills that I don't think are really, at least that I can recall, any part of the curriculum. You just kind of hope. Maybe people already know this or people have learned it, but they're really, really important topics.
I'm thinking over all the classes that are in my program, I don't think soft skills is really focused on, if at all, not enough.
Right.
I know they have an office management course that they go through, and they have an ethics course that they go through, but nothing that's like on soft skills. But maybe they have that as like a gen ed. Maybe they have like a, I guess public speaking doesn't really deal with customer relations, but maybe that's something we need to look at, or maybe I just need to look at our curriculum a little bit better and figure out if we actually do have something like that. The first one that she talks about, this is a technician that wrote the article. She says that you have to like people. That may be something that's not taught in school.
That's
and
true.
As I have, you know, we're just starting out with a new group of students. And one of the first things I tell them is that if you're in this field because you want to work with the animals and you don't want to deal with people, then you're in the wrong room because we have to deal with people all the time.
And maybe even more so, right? To get all this information about what may or may not be going on with the pet. And then you get into the family dynamic and the husband that brought it in and it's the wife's dog and he doesn't know anything or whatever. So like having to actually learn how to interact with people and like get some of this vital information, like maybe you even do that more in veterinary medicine than you do in human medicine in some cases, I would argue.
Yeah, because our patients can't tell us what's wrong with them, right? It's the owners that have to tell us. And then the owners are the ones that are going to be doing the treatments at home, so we have to talk to them for that. So we really have to be very involved in the client communication part of this. It's not a field where you can avoid working with people unless you're working with lab animals.
Right.
Yeah. And I brought that up to my class just yesterday. I said, if you're in this field because you don't want to deal with people and you only want to deal with animals, then unless you're working in the lab field, this isn't the field for you. And,
and
one guy raised his hand. He's like, actually, I kind of do want to work with lab animals. I'm like, all right, well, I guess that does work for you.
Yeah. And the next one is veterinary medicine is a team sport, which I think would probably be my number one out of these five, although I'm going to save my number one for number four when we get there, just because I think that's an important part.
Yes, but it is.
Veterinary medicine is a team sport. Absolutely. Like, you know, when you think about, I think a really great topic in terms of a team sport that we've talked about a little bit on each of the cafe episodes is CPR.
Yeah.
You know, you have somebody that's leading CPR, and then you have this coordinated effort of people, hopefully, rotating in chest compressions and breathing and getting drugs and getting this set up and getting that set up and then going and talk to the owner and all this stuff. You have to learn to work together.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as she says in here, being competent in your skill set is not enough. Team members need to share their knowledge and guide their coworkers to a higher level. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that going back to our David Liss episode, he said, you know, is that new grad cannot be a bad word.
Right.
We need to get people out into practice and then have people put their arm around them, take them under their wing and mentor them and continue their path and continue to bring them up and build them up and teach them skills they didn't learn in school and
right.
and all of these things. And it kind of all ties in together. And so, you know, it being a team sport is really, really a central idea. Sometimes we get away from that. And
yeah.
it really is difficult to kind of remember that. And I know, you know, working in a few hospitals, it gets really clicky.
Yes,
sometimes
it
does. And that's really unfortunate. And just, you know, sometimes those dynamics just come to surface. And, you know, hopefully somebody is there that's got a strong enough personality to say, let's not do this. Let's all move in a common direction and all be the best that we can be, because we're all here for these patients and we're all here for each other. And the more divided you get into those little cliques, the less of the team mentality you have. And I truly believe the less successful overall you're going to be in terms
easily.
Of treating those
yeah.
patients. So
there's right. cliques going on where certain techs only want to work with each other and somebody's needed and you're not confident to have that person help you, then the whole thing fails. Going back to talking about CPR, you know, we talk about recover a lot because that's one of my passions. Yeah, you can do chest compressions and breathe for a patient for a very short period of time, but how successful is that going to be? Not very
right.
successful. You need other people. And when I give my CPR talks, I say there's part one and part 1A of what you do when you have a patient in cardiac arrest. Part one, you start compressions. Part 1A, ask for help. Get help, because you can't do this by yourself for very long.
And what other good ones did you like in there? Any of the other five that really stuck out to you?
This one also goes, I mean, this is my education. It's my niche right now. And it goes back to what David List was saying. Education does not end with graduation.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Like, I'm going to give you the most knowledge I can in that short period of time that I have you, but that's not the end of it. You know, you and I didn't just stop when we got done with school. We got into the field and we got to learning, and then finally we said, hey, this VTS thing is coming around and
right.
let's start working on that. And education goes on forever. That's why there's conferences every year throughout the entire year, because continuing education is a huge thing, and keeping yourself abreast of the current topics and the current knowledge is perfect, and broadening your knowledge. Like, don't just stop with what you know. What you know is great.
Right.
It's awesome if you know enough that you can teach somebody what you know, but there's always going to be something out there that you don't know and that you should learn. People always, a lot of times people in my practices will say, how come you don't know this, Dave? You know everything. And I say, that is a myth. You need to stop spreading that myth. There's a lot of stuff I don't know, and there's a lot of stuff I still need to learn.
Yeah.
Just thinking that you're done with your education once you get that diploma or once you get that degree is just backwards thinking, because getting through school and getting out into the workforce is just the beginning of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think this next one, there's probably some people that maybe this actually might ruffle a few feathers, but I think it's a really important point.
If we've been here long enough, we can ruffle some feathers.
Yeah. And so number four is veterinary medicine as a business. When you look at the landscape of veterinary medicine right now, you know, when you and I started, most of what constituted veterinary hospitals were small businesses. They really are.
Right.
It's you know, back in the day, it was a single practitioner, maybe some practices had an associate or two, but, you know, a few employees, and it operated sometimes as like an odd family dynamic, but it actually really was a small business, and many clinics still are today. Now, of course, we have a lot of corporations coming in and buying up clinics, you know, the VCAs, the Pathways, the Beacons, the Mars, all that. You
all
can
that stuff,
argue
yeah.
all that till the sun goes down. But the reality is that as much as insurance has kind of started to make its way into our field, it still really doesn't have that big of a footprint to where
right.
people just come in and pay a copay and they leave. They actually have to leave a deposit,
mm-hmm.
pay a bill, and then get reimbursed by an insurance company. And so, you know, one of the points that she makes is don't judge clients' wallets or what they're willing to spend on veterinary care. Our responsibility is to offer the best medical option for the patient. And then if they can't do that, then okay, let's figure out on both sides what works best for your patient or for your pet, for our patient that we can afford and that we can move forward that's in a good space. And that's another, I think, rampant problem in veterinary medicine is that we far too often judge, you know, we put ourselves in kind of sometimes the client's shoes that, you know, we would go to the ends of the earth for our
right.
patients, and we don't necessarily look at, you know, these people are trying to pay for their kids' college, or they're trying to plan tomorrow night's meal for their family.
Or it's Christmas this week.
Yeah, or Christmas this week, or
hear.
Tax season. That's
yeah.
another big one,
yeah.
you know. And so the reality is veterinary medicine is a business. And now that I work in academia, you know, I work with interns that have a very fixed terribly low salary. I work with residents that work for a very fixed, terribly low salary for a period of time. And so they don't actually, they're not working on production like they will be when they get out into the real world. And so they, what they charge people or what they charge for that they've actually done for the patient, sometimes it doesn't affect their bottom line, but it affects the bottom line of everybody else that works in the clinic. My salary is not fixed. My salary is dependent on how well our department does. And so sometimes even in our clinic in academia, there are people that don't look at it as a business, whereas people in my position, we do, because our raises, our benefits, all of that stuff is determined by how well our practice does. And that's, I think, a really, really important point. And it sucks. It really does.
Yeah, it does.
It's a hard point. So a lot of people struggle with it, but at the same time, like, I think that's on us to educate clients on why they're paying for what they're paying. And we can't just do everything for free across the board for everybody, or the place will shut down and there won't be anybody to take care of their animals.
And that's a common thing that we hear sometimes, is that you guys are only in it for the
time,
money.
All the time. Right.
And there was a time where I was working, you know, obviously I'm not a vet, I'm a technician, but you know, I was driving a 15-year-old Honda Civic around, and you're telling me that I'm only in it for the money?
Right.
Wouldn't I have a nicer car? You know, wouldn't I not be living paycheck to paycheck? To say that we're only in it for the money, I realize that that probably comes from a point of frustration for the owners.
Right.
It's not something that they've thought about and said that a lot of times when we're working in an emergency, when we present them with $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000 bill, it's the sticker shock. It's a huge shock.
And for sure.
They must think that you guys must be just making tons of money off of the poor working class, and not realizing that, we are the poor working class.
Right.
It's not just you guys. It's everybody.
Right.
And it's really hard for people to understand that.
Yeah. And I even my coworkers, you know, again, working in, I think, in such a large facility where I work, you know, nobody really, in terms of, you know, the veterinary technicians, certainly there's supervisors that do ordering and they actually see the costs of things and all of that. But a lot of us do not, whereas I've worked in practices for many years that I know how much things costs. And people will say, well, like, you know, why do we charge so much for this? Or why do we charge so much for that? And it's not just that product or that piece of equipment costs this amount of money. It costs your time to run it. It costs your education to have learned what that machine is telling you, or, you know, it costs all of these things. All of that is built into what veterinary medicine costs. And it does. It sucks. I get it. But at the same time, like, we have to make money to be able to continue to do what we do. And it's just tough.
Well, I sometimes see sometimes that where people will post, like, I just had a broken leg. Here's my bill from the hospital. And, you know, it's tens of thousands of dollars with a dog that broke a leg, a couple grand, maybe three, four, five grand. But and that's without insurance. And, you know, people that humans that break their leg, they can end up spending that much money with insurance.
Absolutely.
I guess that's part of the treating us as less than a medical field, whereas we are a medical field. We do have all this training. We do have all this schooling that we need to go through. To not understand that and not treat it as though it's a business is really hard for some people to understand.
Absolutely. And one of the things I always use to tell my students, you know, I think one of the biggest ways we kind of have to do it this way, but the other side of it is that we've handicapped ourselves, is if you look at spay and neuter, what I used to tell my students is, what's the difference between a spay and a splenectomy? You're opening up the abdomen and you're taking out parts. Right. But yet we charge $5,000 for a splenectomy, and we might charge $500 for a spay in that same size dog. And why? It's still major abdominal surgery. We're still using all the same drugs. You could even argue that a spay is more painful than a splenectomy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yet they're going home 4, maybe 6 hours postoperatively, because if we don't do it that way, it doesn't get done.
Right.
And so, you know, it's just another one of those things, but it's just something that, you know, it's that elephant in the room. We kind of have to keep that in the back of our mind.
And then the last one is, you must take care of yourself, which,
yes, we've talked about a lot in pretty much every episode.
That's the whole theme of this podcast, is that you have to take care of yourself. And, you know, mental health is a big issue in the field right now. And the quote here that I really liked was, the national shortage of credentialed technicians can be blamed on many factors. Technicians have a hard job physically and emotionally. Burnout is frequently brought on by long hours, short staffing, and practice chaos. And there was a study, the Flourish Veterinary Consulting, they found in a survey of veterinary technicians and assistants that over 50% of them were experiencing moderate to substantial burnout at work, which, you know, it's just, it's staggering.
I work in academia, right? I work in a setting that has a lot of veterinary technicians, interns, residents, faculty, veterinary assistants, animal care attendants across the board. When I look at, I mean, I worked 8 hours today. So if I think about all of the people that I saw today, I have no doubt 50% of them are experiencing moderate to substantial burnout.
Yeah.
And I'm not even like thinking about individual people. I'm just saying the number of people I saw, absolutely 50% of them are experiencing that.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that for a second.
And I think it's different in when we're talking about a general practice versus an emergency practice versus an emergency referral practice. In Robin's hospital, you know, they're short staffed. They're really short staffed. She comes home like really exhausted and really tired and really emotionally drained just because they're working short staffed, and it's harder on everybody. It's harder on the techs. It's harder on the doctors. I would imagine it's probably harder on the patients to, you know, have these treatments rushed and have these appointments rushed to, just to get patients in and out of the door. But, you know, in terms of emergency, you know, you've been involved in, you know, the holiday shifts where there never seems to be enough technicians on the floor. On a holiday shift,
right?
You know, there can be times where there's a little slow period, but overall, there seems to always be a shortage on the holiday shifts,
right?
And that can happen at any time. So that's the hardest part about this technician shortage is that if we staff for our most busy times, half the time we're going to be standing around doing nothing.
Yeah,
and managers have to try to schedule that so that they aren't spending overtime on technicians that are there that don't really need to be there, but also having them there at times where they're actually absolutely needed. So taking care of yourself and dealing with burnout and dealing with compassion fatigue and things like that, that's really hard to do. And it's really a tough issue for our field right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, going back to that national shortage of credentialed technicians. So the next big thing that we're going to talk about is in my home state of California, a massive price increase that's being requested by the Veterinary Medical Board. Right. And it's a very substantial price increase. And it's only, in my opinion and opinions of others, going to lead to a further shortage of credentialed veterinary technicians in the state of California. Because when we think about what it is going to cost for a graduating veterinary technician student to take the VTNE, apply to the state of California and get their license. Dave, I'm talking about over $1,000.
Wow. I can't even, it's, in our field where,
who has that?
What is one of the biggest reasons of turnover and people leaving the field is we don't make enough money.
Right.
And then you're going to ask them to essentially give you a paycheck to just be credentialed.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
probably slightly less than a, well, I guess it depends on where you work.
Yeah.
But you know, essentially the price of a paycheck to just get registered is,
yeah.
Veterinarians, their fees are a lot higher, but you know, obviously they make more money than we do, but it's I can't remember exactly what the amount was, but it was almost double the initial fee, right?
For
the registration, it was double.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
I mean, I can't even imagine. My certification up in New Hampshire, like I was telling you earlier, is $40, which is an increase from what it was 4 or 5 years ago. But still, $40 is quite manageable.
Right, yeah.
And what is the number for California?
Currently, as it stands right now, is $160 every 2 years.
Okay.
So $80 a year. So it's not terrible. I think that's a reasonable ask for a lot of clinics to pay for. What they're trying to go up to is $350 every 2 years.
Every
so
2 years.
Essentially double.
Roughly double. That, I mean, that's just crazy.
And so I'll give us, I know we have a lot of listeners from California.
Yes, we do. We have tons of California listeners.
And so the whole reason we're doing this Tap Room episode is to kind of bring this to our California listeners. And even if you're outside of California, around the country, and you're as appalled by this as we are, you can still write letters even if you don't live in the state of California. You can still write letters, and I'm going to give all the information
even
here.
Even me?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So basically, the background on this is that California, the Veterinary Medical Board, so some states, as Ed alluded to in his episode, there are some states that it's like a voluntary registration. In California, if you want to be an RVT, it's actually like licensed by the Veterinary Medical Board. So the Veterinary Medical Board sets fees for examinations, for RVTs, for veterinarians, and premises and all that. So all that's determined by the Veterinary Medical Board. They brought out this new certificate a couple of years ago that was called the Veterinary Assistant Controlled Substances Permit. So if you think about those smaller practices that maybe don't have an RVT, but still wanted to have somebody that was a staff member have access to controlled substances, this veterinary assistant could go through a background check and get a certificate from the Veterinary Medical Board that says they passed a background check and they can have access to controlled substances. The Veterinary Medical Board thought this was going to be a massive windfall of registrants that would want to do this.
And it was
not. And we at CARFTA, California RVT Association, we kind of saw the writing on the wall that this was not going to be the way that it was. And we tried to express that to them. However, it went forward and it has not brought in the money that they thought it would. And so now they have this huge budget shortfall. So they filed an emergency fee increase with a group called the Office of Administrative Law in California. And what they're trying to do is for veterinarians, for veterinary technicians, and for premises, basically raise the fees to the maximum allowed by current law in California. If they wanted to raise the fees any higher, they would have to go to the state legislature, write a bill, and pass a bill, and all of that stuff. What they're trying to do is these are the maximum fees that the law already allows, and they're trying to raise the fees to that level.
Wow.
So yes, veterinary license renewals, all those fees are going up. Premises, the fees that to get a premise permit for a hospital, those are going up too. But for RVT, so if you are a veterinary technician student graduating school, currently the VTNE to take it costs $325, and that includes your application to the AAVSB, and that includes going and taking the examination. The state of California, you also have to apply to get a license in the state of California, and they review your application, and that fee increase will now cost $350.
Wow.
And then your initial license, which is good for 2 years, will be $350. So if you are a graduating veterinary technician student, between the VTNE, your California application, and your first 2 years of licensure, you're looking at $1,025.
Oh my
and that is
goodness.
Absolutely completely unacceptable.
And so $1,000 on a salary of an entry-level technician,
right,
which is not
right,
not huge.
Yes.
And most likely have some school loan debt.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And
so
I know that in, I believe my school, they give students a voucher for taking the VTNE. So
mm-hmm,
they
mm-hmm.
do get some of that waived. I don't know if right. that works in California or,
yeah.
or you know, it may be different across.
Yeah. And if you've been a veterinary assistant, or, you know, even if you work in a practice where they still call you a veterinary technician and you're not actually licensed, whatever. But if you've been working at a clinic for some time, maybe you can get that clinic to still pay your $350 renewal fee for 2 years. But imagine you're a student just coming out of school and looking for a job. How many clinics do you think are going to pay that $1,025 for
yeah.
you to take the exam, to apply to the state of California, and then to get your license? There's not very many of them that will
right.
do that. And so what I want to implore everybody listening, whether you're in California or not, if you just care about RVTs, on the California RVT Association Facebook page, CARFTA, if you just look up California Registered Veterinary Technician Association. We put out an alert today. It went to all of our membership. It's on our Facebook page. But basically, so the Veterinary Medical Board sent that request to the Office of Administrative Law, and they received it today. Today starts a 5-day comment period.
And today's Friday.
Today is Friday. And unfortunately, Saturday and Sunday count. It's not 5 business days.
Right.
It's 5 calendar days. So we have until Tuesday. And if you want to send a letter about this, and there are sample letters in this post, and there are sample letters on our website if you go to carvta.org, carvta.org, or if you want to write your own letter. Not only do you have to send a letter to the OAL, the Office of Administrative Law, and the website and the email and the street address if you want to send it via snail mail are there, but you also have to send it to the Veterinary Medical Board. Now, the keys here are your letter has to go to both places, both the Veterinary Medical Board and the OAL. And again, there are emails and addresses for both. And if your letter is received after Tuesday, it will not be read. It's just this 5-day window. If you have any questions, please feel free to send us a Facebook message. Send us an email at vettechcafe@gmail.com. I would be happy to chat with you or answer any questions you may have. I don't want to get into too many more of the particulars because I don't want to drown this all out. But basically, again, the state of California, I've done a lot of research on what it costs because of this to get license renewal in a lot of states in the United States. And already $160 for 2 years is at the very top end of the spectrum already. To go to $350 for 2 years is completely unreasonable. And not even just that, but again, that veterinary technician student that's graduating school, I don't care what program they're graduating from. There's no program that's going to build another $1,000 into their education for them to go through all of this. And that doesn't even include the $70-something to get the California live scan fingerprinting. You know, it's exorbitant by the time you start to take all of this stuff in. And so as we were talking about this other article, the five things, you know, about technician shortage and stuff, this is only going to perpetuate that cycle. It's going to make it a lot worse. And it's just not right for a field that historically earns so low to be racked with those kinds of fees. And the CVMA, the California Veterinary Medical Association, I think they have largely resigned themselves to be okay with the veterinarian fee increases and the premise permit fee increases because they know they can't do a whole lot to stop it, but they are also on board and doing a massive campaign to try to get the RVT fees to remain the same because even the veterinarians understand where this is coming from. So
If they lose RVTs, then
right.
the practice is going to suffer.
So again, if you have any questions about this, go to carvta.org, carvta.org, or the California Registered Veterinary Technicians Association Facebook page. You can find our alert. Again, even if you're not in the state of California, you can write a letter. It just has to go to both of those places, both the California Veterinary Medical Board and the OAL, the Office of Administrative Law. And I'll just really quickly say those emails for the OAL. It's staff@oal.ca.gov. And for the Veterinary Medical Board, it is Moneel Singh, moneel.singh@dca.ca.gov. Write one letter, send it to both addresses by Tuesday. It will be read. All of these public comments will be taken into consideration, and hopefully we can stop this from happening.
That's just crazy. And, you know, we had said that we were going to try to get this uploaded for Sunday, but I think maybe I'll just work extra hard tomorrow and get it edited so we can upload this episode tomorrow night so we can give an extra day for these people to write into these emails to get this
stopped. Thank you very much. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Yeah, so again, today we're recording this episode on Friday the 17th. This is when this hit the OAL. So by January 22nd, Tuesday is when your letters have to be in. Whether you are in California, if you're in California, I absolutely implore you to just go to Carvta's website, download their sample email, slap your name on it, slap your address on it, CC it to both the VMB and the OAL and just send it. It probably won't even take you 5 minutes. If you want to write your own, even better. But even if you're outside of California, tell them what it costs to get renewed in your state, what it costs to get your license in your state. Send it to California and make it be known how far off they are.
Right.
Again, just by Tuesday, we would really appreciate it.
Yeah. And hopefully if we get this uploaded by Saturday evening, we could get this uploaded. That'll give us Sunday, Monday. And you said Tuesday was the deadline?
Tuesday is the deadline. I don't know if there's a time. I don't know if it's like 5 o'clock on Tuesday or if it's by like 11:59 p.m. Right. California time. I don't have that, but
uploaded as soon as possible. We won't even delay it. We'll just
get it edited. It's a government entity, so something tells me no later than 5 o'clock on Tuesday.
That's true. Let's hopefully flood their emails with all these letters to get this.
Yeah, and if you send an email and you heard about this on the Vet Tech Tap Room, send us an email and let us know you did.
And
we would love to know that you heard about this via this method, and because that's the whole point, honestly, that I brought to Dave tonight to do a Tap Room episode was to talk about this. So hopefully this helps in some small way.
Yeah, that'll be great if we can get this corrected, because that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. So, Dave, let's transition from massive fee increases to, we did this with the first Tap Room, and I really loved the idea, and we got a lot of good feedback on it. Something right with the profession, or something positive.
Well, something right with the profession. Let's hope that our imploring people to write into the California Veterinary Medical Board to get this fee increase stopped, hopefully that next time we do this, this tap room, that'll be something great that we can talk about.
Yes, I would love that.
But the other thing that I think is right with the profession right now is all the support that we're getting for Australia. Mm-hmm. We first started seeing stuff about this, you know, a few weeks ago about Australia is essentially on fire, not realizing that some of these fires have started in November. So this has been going on for a long period of time. And I know I know California is very prone to having those wildfires every year. But this seems to be, in Australia, it seems to be the entire country on a massive scale. So, you know, I've seen lots of videos of people doing great things out there. You know, firefighters like giving koalas bottles of water. And it's just heartbreaking to see, you know, these wild animals just so reliant on the kindness of humans, where normally they're not that trusting of humans, but being at the last source of energy and last source of resources, they're relying on humans and humans coming forward and you know, trying to help out these animals. And the numbers are just staggering. I don't know how they come up with the numbers of, I saw a report saying that they've lost over 500 million animals to these wildfires. And A, I don't know how they come up with these numbers, but B, that, I mean, that's just incredible. These fires have caused so much problems. But the fact that people are stepping forward, and we've been debating whether or not we want to put our name behind some type of, for lack of a better term, a GoFundMe page to bring funds to the to the Australian effort. We got one from Vex earlier today about their supporting a wildlife fund for Australia. But I guess I would implore people, if you're going to be donating to some type of Australia fund, make sure you do your research and make sure that that it's going to the right place and going to the right people, because, you know, it's 2020 and scammers are out there. So make sure you're donating to the right cause.
Absolutely. And as you said, you know, I'm from California, and brush fires are nothing new to me. I lived through the Laguna Beach firestorms in 1993, where, I mean, went through Laguna Canyon and was just burning million-dollar homes left and right, to the Camp Fire that was really big, to the Paradise Fire, and so many. I looked at a map where they superimposed the continent of Australia over the United States. And, I mean, we were talking about basically the entire West Coast of the United States.
And the entire East Coast.
And the entire East Coast, you know, from New York City down to Tampa, and a few places in between on fire. So this isn't, you know, because I was trying to wrap my mind around, okay, well, like, in terms of acreage, right, in terms of percent containment, because these are phrases I'm used to hearing in California, like, what are we talking about? And so then when they actually superimpose the map over the United States, and it's like, okay, a large portion of the United States is on fire. Now I get it. So, yes, absolutely. And if you are thinking about ways to help, Dave said, I would just say, please, absolutely help. But just make sure where you're sending what you're sending is going to a reputable place, because those other places are out there. But there is, in our field, there's been a lot of chatter about it on Facebook and social media, and there are some really good links out there. And we'll try to post a few online that people have donated to and have had good success. And
when we talked to our guest yesterday, when we talked, she works with World Vets, and she said that there were people out in Australia working towards that effort to help take care of these animals, which is great.
Right.
I think it's awesome.
Right. So I definitely, you know, I would encourage that. And again, just make sure you know where your money's going, basically. And hopefully, you know, as the weather turns, because I know that's what it takes in California. It takes a cold front and rain and cooler temperatures and more humidity. Hopefully as the season change in Australia, it'll just get a little bit better, and slowly it will just kind of start to work itself out. And
hopefully,
otherwise, you know, maybe some of these very venomous and poisonous animals that live down there, that, you know, maybe some of them have just not made it through, and it's not as scary to go down there anymore.
All right, Jeff. Well, I think that's about it for this episode. I know we said we were going to make these episodes a lot shorter, and this one's, what are we at, about 45, almost at 45 minutes now.
So
that's almost as long as our normal episode. So this wasn't exactly a mini episode, but I feel like we're doing a lot of good by getting the word out about the California
increases.
And I hope we can make some real change with that. So with that, I will bid you adieu.
Yes, absolutely.
Bid our listeners adieu.
Yes, and we will be back in the tap room, hopefully not too far in the future, and hopefully we can give a positive update on the California license situation.
Yeah, I would like to find, when we get through all that, I'd like to find out what exactly happened and maybe bring that to our listeners.
Yeah,
once we get the results of all that.
Absolutely. And then we'll see everybody on the Vet Tech Cafe before too long. We got another episode coming out a week from Sunday. We're very excited about that episode, and we'll see everybody on social media.
All righty. Thanks, guys.
So, all right. Thanks for coming by the Vet Tech Tap Room. We hope you guys have a great Friday night. Thanks a lot.